Hello, I'm Dr. Christine Lane, Editor-in-Chief of Annals of Internal Medicine. Over the next 10 to 15 minutes or so, I'll give you a quick peek at the new articles you'll find if you go to annals.org. There's been a lot of discussion about vaccines in the U.S., and the first article I'll highlight is about the shingles or zoster's vaccine, an important adult vaccine that has not been the focus of the debate about vaccines. The recombinant zoster vaccine is a two-dose vaccine recommended for persons 50 years and older to prevent shingles. Before the availability of the recombinant vaccine, there was a live zoster vaccine. Unanswered questions concern the effectiveness in persons who receive only one of the two recommended doses and the effectiveness of the recombinant vaccine in persons who previously received the live vaccine. To address these questions, researchers from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, conducted analyses of a random sample of adults aged 65 years or older enrolled in Medicare Parts A, B, and D with fee-for-service coverage between 2007 and 2019. Participants had to have 6 months of continuous coverage before study enrollment, no claims for zoster since 2007, and no prior recombinant zoster vaccination. Among over 3.4 million individuals evaluated, the one-year effectiveness of at least one recombinant vaccine dose was 56% against any zoster outcome. Effectiveness was similar among individuals aged 65 to 80 years and among immunocompromised and immunocompetent individuals. Vaccine effectiveness was about 52% among individuals who had previously received live vaccine, compared with about 58% among those who had not. A second analysis included 146,000 individuals to determine the effectiveness of two doses of the recombinant vaccine versus one. This analysis found that receipt of two recombinant vaccine doses yielded a relative effectiveness of 67.9% against any zoster outcome compared with one dose. Additionally, the second dose is similarly effective whether it is administered within the recommended window or within an extended window after the first dose. These findings will be useful to inform evidence-based recommendations for vaccination to prevent shingles. There's concern about rising rates of cancer incidence in young adults. The next article reports a study that compared international cancer incident trends of 13 cancer types in younger adults and older adults. Researchers from the Institute of Cancer Research and Imperial College London studied annual cancer incidence data from 2003 to 2017 from 42 countries in Asia, Europe, Africa, North and South America, and Australasia. They evaluated 13 cancer types previously reported to be increasing in many countries in younger adults: leukemia, colorectal, stomach, breast, prostate, endometrial, gallbladder, kidney, liver, esophageal, oral, pancreatic, and thyroid cancer. Cancer in younger adults was defined as diagnosed between ages 20 to 49 years, and in older adults as diagnoses at age 50 years or older. Cancer incidence rates increased in younger adults in over 75% of countries examined for thyroid, breast, colorectal, kidney, endometrial cancer, and leukemia. For all these cancer types except colorectal cancer, incidence rates also increased in older adults. For colorectal cancer, the increasing trends in younger adults were greater than the trends in older adults in 69% of countries. For liver, oral, esophageal, and stomach cancer, incident rates decreased in younger adults in more than half of the countries studied. The results indicate that changes in exposures resulting in increases in cancer incidence rates are likely to be common across age groups rather than specific to younger adults. The cancer types that increased in both younger and older adults in most countries were related to obesity, with endometrial and kidney cancer being the most strongly associated with obesity. This study suggests that in many countries, cancers previously thought to be rising only in younger adults are increasing in both younger and older adults. The researchers hope that their observations will help guide future research priorities and public health guidelines. Primary care physicians work hard, but just how hard has been difficult to document. Next, I'll highlight a study that estimated the yearly work effort for primary care physicians per patient on their primary care panel and also examined physician and patient factors associated with work effort. Researchers studied electronic health record and administrative data from 406 primary care physicians who delivered care for at least 9 months in 2021 across 33 clinics in the Mass General Brigham Health System. The researchers estimated the average work effort per patient for each primary care physician by combining estimations of total appointment time and time spent on the electronic health record outside of the scheduled patient visit hours. The researchers found that physicians spent a median of 1.7 hours per year per patient on their panel, representing about 62 hours per week for a full-time clinician. Interestingly, part-time clinicians spent more time per patient on average than full-time clinicians. Patient characteristics associated with higher annual primary care physician time expenditure included older age, medical complexity, Medicaid coverage, and more frequent messages for medical advice. Hopefully, these findings can inform efforts to facilitate the sustainability of primary care, including adjusting panel sizes, prioritizing team-based workflow for managing patient messages, and using novel technologies like artificial intelligence to help physicians reply to patient messages. They should also help to inform current discussions for the reform of relative value units to better reflect the work of effort of primary care physicians compared to specialists. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cause of cancer-related deaths for both men and women. Screening for colorectal cancer is an effective strategy to reduce morbidity and mortality. The next article reports the American College of Physicians' review of current performance measures for colorectal cancer screening and surveillance to identify those measures that are methodologically sound and evidence-based to inform physicians, payers, and policymakers. ACP found that only one of the five measures reviewed was evidence-based and methodologically sound. This measure was 7-day risk standardized hospital visit rate after outpatient colonoscopy. The other four performance measures reviewed were either not aligned with current scientific evidence, promoted unnecessary screening in patients beyond the appropriate age groups, or the measures were not tested, valid, or reliable at the level where they were being applied, and hence no evidence that using these measures would improve clinical outcomes. ACP stresses that using appropriate measures is essential to avoid unnecessary harms to patients and to limit physician burden, protect reputation, and reimbursement. Cardiac implantable electronic devices have increased the quality and duration of life for many patients. As their use grows, clinicians need to diagnose and manage several device-associated complications that may arise in patients with these devices. Next is a review that provides practical information for general internal medicine physicians working in outpatient and inpatient settings who will inevitably take care of patients with cardiac implantable devices. The review focuses on the four most common complications: generator lead failure, infections, lead-related venous obstruction, and lead-related tricuspid regurgitation. The progressive adoption of leadless devices may significantly reduce many of these complications. Nonetheless, optimal management requires input from a multidisciplinary team. Next is a new Annals Beyond the Guidelines feature. Two experts, a general internal medicine physician and a surgeon, debate the 2024 U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommendations of biannual screening mammography for women aged 40 to 74 years in the context of Ms. R., a 39-year-old woman. In 2016, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommended screening for women starting at age 50, but updated its statement in 2024 to recommend biannual screening starting at age 40. As such, asking when would you screen this 39-year-old woman for breast cancer is an important clinical question. The general internal medicine physician suggests that the patient begin screening mammography every other year at age 40. The surgeon finds fault in the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommendation, which she believes is based on low-quality modeling data. She said that the frequency of unnecessary follow-up imaging and biopsies result in anxiety, false positives, false negatives, and interval cancers are important drawbacks to routine mammography and recommends against it for any woman at average risk, but especially those younger than age 50. Go to annals.org to watch the video of a lively debate or read the accompanying article. You can earn CME and MOC credit if you do. The topic of this month's In the Clinic review is chronic coronary artery disease. The article offers a pragmatic refresh of your knowledge about this common condition and another opportunity to earn CME and MOC credit. That brings us to the end of this podcast. I hope I prompted your curiosity to go to annals.org to take a look at some of the new articles I've highlighted here. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Beth Jenkinson, Andrew Langman, and Bernie Turner for their technical support.